Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Larry Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education. Also joining us in our conversation is Denise Rabin, partner in IBM's financial management practice. Larry, let's talk for a moment about the President's Management Agenda, or the PMA. In the last OMB scorecard, unlike education, about half of the federal agencies received a red rating in financial performance. What has your organization done to be one of only a few agencies that continue to receive a green rating in progress in this area? And could you tell us from your perspective why this is such a challenge for many federal agencies?
Well, as an agency, we take the financial management and the President's management agenda very seriously. At the top levels of the organization, we meet regularly to talk about what the issues are of our being in compliance and our continuing to improve. And we work these areas very seriously. We have monthly meetings on the OMB scorecards, and those are focused on what are the things we expect to get done over the next quarter in order to not just be scored well, but to actually improve our performance. That results in a scorecard. We carefully plan for the improvements in our operations, and we're really very proud to be the first agency to get green on financial performance. One of the things that we do is we don't just always look inside or internally, but we try and incorporate best practices as we've seen them throughout government and from industry, from the private sector. We don't know everything. We've got a lot to learn, and we try and incorporate the best that we see out there in the rest of the world. We do recommend that as an approach. People should be looking outside their own areas to see what things they could be doing to improve it. And we've also – we view the President's management agenda so importantly that we also take a very active role in competitive sourcing, in proper payments, and budget performance integration.
Larry, I'm curious, as a consultant, so what lessons have you learned and what would you share with your colleagues in other agencies?
Well, as a consultant, I think that the one thing that we have always done, and it's what I tried to do when I came into the department, is that typically information and processes are worked on a vertical line, whatever that line happens to be. And one of the best ways to find improvements is tilt things sideways and look at it from a different perspective. Gather data along a path that's a little different and look at the organization and see how activities might be done in a parallel fashion rather than a sequential fashion. And typically in any organization, public sector, private sector, almost any industry, if they've been doing things the same way for 10 years, the world has changed. And there's usually plenty of opportunity. It may have been a great thing when they did it, but there's probably a lot of improvement that could be made today.
Now, budget and performance integration lies at the heart of ensuring both the strategic allocation and the efficient use of funds. Many agencies are working to implement the budget and performance integration aspects of the PMA. Could you tell us about your department's efforts to get green and sustain that for the budget and performance integration? And how has your organization expanded the use of financial data to inform its management decision-making processes?
That's a complex question, Al, but I'll do my best with it. One of the very useful tools for us is the OMB's Performance Assessment Rating Tool, something that most people call PART. That's an effective tool that's helped us to evaluate program performance. So we have used that as an important part of looking at our programs. We then make decisions regarding funding based on program success as measured by that, but also the efficient execution of that program. Are we getting the results that we intended, but are we also getting those in an efficient manner, not just an effective manner? All of our major programs, and I can't say that we yet have it for every single program. That's an objective we want to get to. But we've established performance metrics. So we've attempted to establish our baseline against which we can measure programs. That then lets us understand whether we're actually winning or losing on those programs. Helps us assess them well. You have to have a good plan if you're going to take any performance measurement, and you have to have something that you want to achieve and be able to measure against it. We are implementing something we call Visual Performance Suite, and that lets us gather that data that comes in from our grantees integrate it with other data from our own organization, such as grant amounts, budgets, other things, and helps us get a good status and a good picture of where the program, what it looks like, how it performs, and then lets us make some pretty good assessments. It lets us take a pretty good look at reviewing returns on taxpayers' investments.
Larry, your department received an unqualified opinion on its principal financial statements for the fifth consecutive year, which demonstrates a clear pattern of financial accountability. However, this has not always been the case. First, what is the significance of a clean opinion? And second, what do you perceive to be the keys to successfully achieving a timely and clean opinion?
Denise, this is a good question. More than 5 years ago, when we weren't getting clean opinions, things weren't timely, reconciliations weren't done, transactions got old before they were dealt with, and we just basically didn't have the controls needed around our financial data. And when I say we, it's predecessors, and it was my predecessors that got us the most of our clean opinions. And they did it through a lot of hard work. The first thing is putting in some of what I would call the basic fundamentals of proper accounting. Do your reconciliations, get them done. Do the accruals that you need to do to reflect this year's period. And they started off by getting clean and getting current at the end of the fiscal year where we got our first statement. It then was the challenge of how do you keep current each year? And that was the first challenge. Well, we then implemented a state-of-the-art accounting system, which was a great help. We were able to then automate the bulk of our transactions. So instead of having people have to touch all of the transactions, we then had time to evaluate, to reconcile, and to chase down problems, suspense items, and others. So automation let our staff get into a data analysis role rather than a data input role. That led to a little better internal control, and then we got into the process of continual and current reconciliation of major accounts and systems and working down those large suspense items and keeping the number small. Now, as we got that done, we then took the next step, which was now how can we get to this every quarter? Not necessary to get a clean annual opinion, but in terms of have a good cleaned up shop, you want to, on a quarterly basis, have everything as clean as if it were a year-end cutoff. We're now migrating to and we're implementing that on a monthly basis. So we're going to have a clean set of statements, not just the transactions process for the month, but the appropriate accruals and others that it should be a 12th of a year when you look at a month. So we've continually worked to get the process down to where it's more and more current. We now believe that within 10 days or 12 days at the end of the month, we're current every month.
In addition to achieving an unqualified opinion, education has received the prestigious Association of Government Accountants Certificate of Excellence in Accountability Reporting, otherwise known as a CEAR Award, for three consecutive years. Tell me, what are the important benefits of accountability reporting?
Well, if you look at, as I described earlier, what education department is it's a very small organization processing a very large volume of dollars. Our grants and our loans and the current liability for subsidies for those loans, again, was almost $100 billion last year. Take $2 billion out for our operations, and we have less than $2 billion controlling a flow of $98 billion. Accountability is pretty important when you're looking at dollar flows of that magnitude. So we take it very seriously. We're very proud of of getting the recognition that we did get. We're honored to be recognized by the CEAR program and have been for the past 3 years. We're probably not going to participate this year because of some funding level issues. And quite honestly, we're working on some of our other issues equally as well. If you look at our 2006 Performance and Accountability Report, which, by the way, is available on our website, it gives a lot of information around these. We're proud of the fact it's down to 200 pages, which I think is still twice as long as it should be. But it's the second shortest in government. And it was 351 a year ago, and it's 200 pages today or less than that. So we're working to be able to provide transparency that the public can see by going out to our website or ordering the report.
Thanks, Larry. Education continues to enhance the model for what constitutes a high-quality financial reporting environment, recognizing the importance of accurate and timely financial information to inform decision-making. To this end, would you tell us about the department's upgrade of its financial management system?
Yes, this was something we started a couple of years ago, completed at the end of fiscal year 2006, and it was implemented on October 10th at the beginning of our fiscal year for FY 2007. The reason we did this upgrade was as much to be technologically current as it was functionality. We do get increased functionality both from the application itself, the suite of financial software, but also we were able to migrate to a more current version of the database. So between the database tools and our ability to mine data and understand the issues a little better and improve functionality in the software, we decided to go to that. Also, being current, it's supported better by our vendors. It also provides us with a much broader reach into the rest of the organization, and it's a better support tool for all of education.
Could you tell us if the department has plans to implement a financial management line of business?
Actually, no. While we have a new system, we're proud of it, it's very good, we are not one of the providers of the FMLOB, financial management line of business. It is other departments which will be providing that. So as we need to migrate from this system to the next generation, it'll be to one of those providers of FMLOB. Now, does this mean we don't think it's important? Absolutely not. The deputy CFO of our department is the co-chair on the FMLOB transition team. So this is something we take very seriously. We just are not one of the ones who chose to bid to be one of the providers.
Now, Larry, on this on the previous theme of accountability, agencies are required to annually review programs to identify those which may be susceptible to significant improper payments. Now, improper payments include things such as wrong amounts, ineligible recipients, or improperly used funds by the recipients. Could you elaborate on initiatives and strategies that the department has employed to successfully manage and reduce improper payments? And how much of a challenge does this still represent for your organization?
Well, Al, this is one of those problems that's never solved because we make so many payments every year, and there's always new ways that mistakes can occur one way or another. But we take the Improper Payments Act seriously. It was passed in 2002. We've taken a number of measures to try and improve the way we both understand and manage the process to minimize improper payments. We have an interagency partnership with the Department of Energy's Oak Ridge National Labs. They've got some strong statistical capacity and capability and model building and data mining and others. And we have a cooperative agreement with them where they use our data to assess what they believe is the rate of improper payments based on the audit findings that we've had. And they have access to all of our audit findings. They have access to the data around our grants and others. And they then can come back with a detailed and reliable estimate of what the total amount of improper payments probably is. So we've worked with them, and that does two things. It gives us a good balance sheet estimate. It gives us a good reporting estimate. But more importantly, or equally importantly, it also identifies those areas that we should be focusing on to reduce our risk of improper payments. So we've worked that seriously. Our Department of Federal Student Aid is undertaking detailed reviews of the Pell Grant and the Federal Family Education Loan programs, again, to identify where are the risks of improper payments and how can we minimize those. So we've got a detailed section, again, on that in our performance and accountability report. If people want to look at that further, there's a good discussion of it in there. But this is a very important thing for us. And again, I can't stress enough, we have a small budget to run our operation. We have responsibility for a huge volume of payments. So this is a very important part of our concerns.
Great. What is the progress of the department's grant management line of business effort? We will ask Larry Warder, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Education, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.